One of the biggest things is that secure HIPAA-compliant telehealth platforms are now widely available to providers. Even like small, like one-person mental health therapists can access that at a reasonable rate, and patients can have that. So as long as a patient has an internet access and a computer or a smartphone, or now even Alexa, yes, Amazon has just inked a deal with Teladoc to allow Teladoc to provide services through Alexa. I don't know that I'd go for that, but you know, some people really like their Alexa. According to IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science, in 2021, there were more than 350,000 digital health apps. And there were 90,000 new ones were introduced in 2020. So I think there's probably 150,000 more that are out there right now. Including in that figure are, you know, medical apps such as, you know, it's a Teladoc, personal health record apps, medication management apps, diagnostic apps, remote monitoring apps, which now physicians can get paid for, disease management apps, among others. And then there's also multiple apps where you can plug something into your cell phone, and with two fingers or with one electrode on your chest, you can do an EKG and it can send it to your doctor. So if you're having palpitations, if you have AFib, I mean, they can just send it right there from your phone. You can be at dinner. It's amazing. Wearable devices, there have been some really dramatic advances in this. So forget about your Fitbit, you know, measuring your sleep and how many steps you've taken. This can measure, you know, your heart rate variability over a period of time, your oxygen saturation level, respiratory rate, arterial and peripheral elasticity, because they have, I can't even say what kind of sensors they have. They have these different sensors in them, and then they have software that scrubs digital artifacts from the data. And ultimately, these wearable devices are going to be used to control medical devices that you use at home. So maybe like a CPAP machine or something like that, because they can measure in real time. And the integration of that is going to be key. So precipitating factors for that are, you know, obviously COVID, advances in technology that are moving faster than anybody would have ever imagined. The easy customization. You know that if you have an idea to accomplish a specific healthcare purpose or function, if you have an idea for an app, there are companies you can just go, and you don't need to know coding. You just need to know how you want it to interface, what you want it to do, and they'll create it for you. I mean, so like a health system could get their own custom app very easily now. I mean, I'm sure it takes money and time, but it's very easily customizable now. Lack of staffing, caused in part by COVID and also cost pressures with decreasing reimbursement over the years. There are now, you can do customized communications, like check in on your iPad, although I really detest that, because whose fingers have been on that, you know. But at least you know you're in the correct order when you get called back. and let's not forget consumer demand. I mean, people want to have instant access to their records. So there's, you know, the EHR portals with the interoperability rules. You know, you're supposed to be able to give them their notes and some other information. And you can do all that from a smartphone or computers. And then people want to be actively involved in their healthcare, especially when you have something like diabetes and cardiac issues. We've all seen the commercial with the sensor on the side and the person taking a picture with their cell phone, and then tells them what they should eat. So, I mean, it's pretty neat. But you know, there are a lot of legal issues, and the most important of those are: is it a medical device? And you know, the problem is, it's like, well, it can be deployed across cell phones or around a computer system. So what the 21st Century Cures Act did was create a function-specific definition of medical device. So whether it's on a computer or a smartphone, the functionality is what matters. So software can be regulated as a medical device, or software can be a medical device, software in a medical device. So regulated software functions would be like, you know, that mobile EKG, something that turns something into a piece of medical equipment, active patient monitoring, like when you do the remote patient monitoring, those are will qualify as a medical device, and you'll have to get FDA clearance. Or if it imitates another one, you can have, you know, there's the different levels. But importantly, they also say what's not a medical device. And so a lot of the apps that you have are not, you know, getting access to your medical record. The iPad to check you in for your doctor's appointment is not a medical app. General purpose things like your phone will turn it into something into a magnifying glass. And importantly, apps for people to log, record, track, and evaluate or make decisions regarding general fitness and health, those are not medical devices. But then you have to also think about the FTC. So in 2009, they came out with a health breach notification rule, and it applied to personal health records, anybody who provided that. Well, they came out with a statement in 2021 that said personal health records also include health apps. So it brought all these things that people thought weren't subject to that rule. So like if you have an app that, say you're trying to monitor your drinking, and you enter your alcohol intake in that, and that gets breached. Well, I mean, I think it makes sense that they should notify you that your personal information has been breached.